You can follow me on Twitter at The Kaufman Show. Spry is at MD Spry. And we're going to close off by playing an interview that we did this morning with Scott Adsit and John Lutz. They played the characters Pete Hornbacker and Lutz on 30 Rock. And, I mean, one of the most seminal shows of the last decade.
Right.
And they are professional improv comedians. And
right.
That's what they're in town doing. And we talked a little 30 Rock. We talked a little bit about Mike's
we talked about
aversion.
My short pants and my wet legs.
Mike hates shorts. And, I mean, we don't want to blow too much of this interview for you.
Yeah.
No point in giving you the Coles notes. But a really fun, wide-ranging conversation. And without any further ado, here it is. Adsit and Lutz on The Kaufman Show with Mike Spry.
Don't know what happened, but it was so hot for the last couple of weeks.
Siri was lying to me when I was packing.
Oh, Siri, you asked Siri?
Yeah.
And the
what'd
weather.
She tell you?
She said it would be like 75 at the least every day.
See, it's my fault. I never invest in shorts because I don't believe in them because they only work half the year.
Yeah.
And then I broke down like 2 weeks ago because it was like 35.
And you bought.
And I bought shorts, and now it's cold.
And the weather. And basically
and
the weather is going, screw you.
I'm never going to get that money back.
Yeah, no. Nope.
Well, you also kind of blinded me, though, because when you showed up in studio on Tuesday in shorts, I've never seen whiter legs in my life.
Yeah, I got the whitest legs ever.
Well,
very Canadian legs.
Not for long.
All right, so first of all, thanks so much for joining us, guys. We really appreciate it. Why don't you tell us about what you're doing in Montreal, what the show is like in Montreal.
Well, we do a show together at the UCB Theatre in New York, which is just us doing long-form improv and feeding off each other and creating a bunch of characters and a bunch of scenes and scenarios and even just weird rhythms.
Yeah. Yeah, we basically just take one suggestion and then go from there and then it kind of folds in on itself after about halfway through the show. It kind of starts coming back and characters start meeting other characters. And
it's like reading a pop-up book.
Yeah, on stage.
Yeah.
I went to the UCB last summer, lined up on a Sunday night when I was in town, and was blown away by the rabid fans that were there. Mm. It seemed like people were there week in, week out.
They line up down the block.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... also because I think that show is free, and it's a lot of college kids just, you know, come for, you know, and it's they just keep coming every week to week, and they're awesome.
Well, that place is also so iconic. I mean, it started, Amy Poehler started it back in the day, right?
Amy, Matt, and Ian.
Amy, Matt, and Ian?
Yeah.
That sounds like a crazy, like it's Amy's last name. Matt, and Ian.
It's Irish.
Yes, exactly.
Is there a bit of a rivalry between the Chicago players and the New York players?
Well, New York players are largely Chicago players, so I don't think there is much of anything
yeah,
like
no,
that.
Yeah, no, because all those guys came from Chicago. And then there was a base, like, there are strictly New York improvisers.
Yeah, but they play at the spaces that were created by Chicago people.
Huh.
There are three, I think there are three major places to go and improvise, and they're all run by Chicago people.
I feel like if that was Montreal and Toronto, they would just automatically hate each other.
There'd be knives.
Yes, well, yeah.
Well, so many of us transplanted.
What? Yeah, well, in Chicago, there was some rivalry between factions of improv, like Second City Improv Olympic and the Annoyance Theater, and then that all kind of smoothed out once everybody started doing all the different shows, performing at all the different theaters, and that's kind of what New York and Chicago are, is because it is so many different, there's overlap.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that, talking about regions, that when you perform in one city, it can be very different from performing in another? Like, will Montreal be different from New York, different from Chicago, from Tucson?
I think
but you guys are big in Tucson.
Yeah, we're huge. Huge in Tucson.
Well, it's arid.
Yes, yeah.
It makes for good humor.
I think it's the space more than the city,
right?
That creates an audience reaction, right?
Because we're in the Mainline Theater here, and it's perfect because it kind of feels like the UCB Theater because it has the audience on the sides view as well as the front. And we've done shows where the space is so vast and big, improv's more intimate, I think.
Ours is anyway.
Yeah. So whenever you have like a huge theater, it sometimes sucks the energy because you're not using mics or you're not, like, we use lavs one time and we start the show and it's like, hello, we are, yeah, oh no, this is bad.
Yeah. Well, because there's a certain intimacy to a theater like, well, Mainline or that UCB theaters.
Yeah.
The last row is like the front row in a lot of places.
Exactly.
And you play the big theaters like we have sometimes, and the audience is just so far away that there's just no chance of, like, commingling with them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And not that we pull them out into the show or anything, but there is a need to feel like you're in the same bed with them. Right?
Ew, I guess.
Weird. Maybe we think of things differently, yeah. John.
That's what you think every time you're on stage. It's like, I'm going to take this audience to bed.
We are in bed, and John's watching.
Do you think that people come to the shows expecting to see your characters from television?
I think so sometimes.
Really?
Because there was one review that was that once said, Scott had so many, like, such great acting skill and all this stuff, and then it was like, and John was actually kind of funny. I didn't. It was just like, oh yeah, well, I'm not that guy improvising.
Yeah.
I think there was one. Sometimes people come up and go, wow, you do so many different characters than just the one you do on the show. And it's like, well, yes, I can only do one on 30 Rock. I can't do, unless I'm playing my mom. All right.
Do you think that there's a typecasting that gets involved when you do a show for such a successful show for such a long sustained run?
Well, I had this pilot season. I had a few things that seemed a bit panicky and bald. I didn't kind of enjoy doing them. So I kind of shied away from those and stayed with stuff that I thought was, you know, a little more interesting for me.
We went
after
out
having done something like that for
we
so
went
long.
Out for a lot of the same
yeah.
parts, which is weird. So maybe they're not typecasting us. They just don't know what to do with us.
Or maybe we're more similar than we know. But I've been doing a lot of work since the show, and none of it has been like Pete, as far as I'm concerned.
Is that a relief?
No, it's not a relief. It's just nice. It's just different.
Right.
Because it was fun playing Pete, and I feel like I've kind of explored that side of myself. And if I don't want to be typecast, because I think I've got more to offer than that, though it was great to do.
Were you happy when 30 Rock ended?
I was happy the way it ended, because it ended really nice. Like, we knew it was coming. They were able to write it to end it.
Yeah.
And you kind of didn't have that, like, halfway through the summer, oh, your show's canceled.
Right, and all the characters got to kind of wind up somewhere, and everything kind of, I thought, worked out. Everyone ended up where they should have.
It doesn't happen a lot in TV these days.
No.
And then you got to say goodbye to the crew and everybody working in the building. You got to know that it was the end, rather than just like, oh, I won't see that person again for, I don't know how long, unless we work together again on some other show. So it was really nice. And I miss that, but it also, like, I almost called you Pete. like Scott said, that it's nice because it's a change. You get to do something different.
Do you, Christopher Guest is notorious for coming off almost curmudgeonly in interviews, and he says because he's not his character, so he's not that. Do you, socially, like, outside of what you do professionally, is it going to be a challenge to, are you expected to be funny?
Oh, yeah, listen to these dicks.
I
think people expect me to be uglier. I get a lot of, you're so much more handsome in person, which is a great compliment, kind of. In person is not going to live on in perpetuity like Pete.
You're being nice. You're not like your character. And I'm like, oh no, I hope not. I hope I don't, you know, want to, you know, go to pumpkin patches and like give my mom massages.
Well, you can hope.
I can hope.
Does that say something about the sort of state of the way people view celebrity and aren't able to disassociate a character from who they are in real life?
I don't know. I think
that's always been the state of celebrity, right?
Yeah, especially if the show's been on a long time, they think that you are that person. That's nice, because then that means you're doing a good job.
But, you know, I think, you know, we're lucky in that our characters are likable. There are people who just... I get the impression from looking at interviews with a guy named Larry Linville, who was on MASH,
right,
who played Frank Burns, and beautifully. He was great. But he also I think he eventually had kind of contempt for the character because he was talking about how it's a comedic contrivance and he really doesn't have a life beyond the joke. And he kind of seemed, and he, you know, maybe I was misinterpreting, but he seemed bitter about it. So I think we're lucky in that.
Well, I did call Liz the C word in the first season, and there were people that did not, weren't, when there was a book signing once, people would get to, like, Jack McBrayer and be like, oh, hey, how's it going? And they'd get to me with the book and be like, I guess sign the book. I didn't really, and what I want to say is, like, Tina wrote that. I said that.
It's a hard word to come back from.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, that's great. I think we should wrap up just talking a bit more about improv and about the craft. I every time I meet an improv comedian, I get the impression that that's their first love, more than acting, more than just the being out there and having it be your brain that has the pressure on it.
Yeah, it really is. For me, I love acting and I love writing and I love all that, but there's nothing as pure as improv, where you're just making it up as you get. It's just so fun.
It's the actual moment of, it's yes, the spark of creation, and it just keeps sparking like for the entire run of the show.
And you're doing it with somebody, so it's not just you in a room writing, or
it's not you trying to figure out someone else's work as well. I mean, like, yeah, doing a script is almost like trying to solve a mystery sometimes. It's a play, you know, the author's not there generally, and you just kind of have to figure out how to make this work. And in improv, you are figuring out how to make it work, but it's all about you and your partner.
Mm-hmm. And when you can make your partner laugh, or your partner can make you laugh, or mess around with them, that's the other thing. It's like, because then you're surprising each other on stage, which is just, it's the best.
That we want to laugh on stage.
Not that we want to laugh on stage, but it's fun to try.
Yeah. It's fun to see just a spark in John's eye that no one else can see sometimes. Where I can see I've made him laugh and he's trying mm-hmm. not to.
How do you not laugh? Do you bite your lip?
No, I don't. I try to just be in the character so much that I don't laugh, that I don't find it funny. But sometimes it is like I should bite my lip.
I think of like Fallon on the old SNL skits where he was constantly trying to cover his face or something.
Yeah.
Like
that. But that was his bit, right?
I don't know.
He was the guy who cracked
up. I don't know if he ever mastered not breaking.
He mastered breaking.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Is he a master breaker?
Yeah.
Has improv, like, it's acceptance, but it's gained not necessarily popularity, but it's spread into, like, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and I guess Whose Line Is It Anyway has come back now, and the Jeff Garlin films where there's a lot of improv. Does that open up new opportunities for you guys to explore improv outside of, like, a stage setting or a theater setting?
Yeah, I mean, it's still a pretty controlled environment with cameras because it's expensive.
Right.
And you can't really just kind of, like, screw around and hope for the best. But, like, I've done Larry Sanders and I did a Christopher Guest film, and it's about, in those shows, it's like getting from point A to point C, and B is up to you.
Right.
And so the dialogue is pretty much what's being improvised. Getting there, the way you get there is improvised.
But you still know that you have to get to be this by the end of the scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Do you have anything else, sir?
Well, they just told us to wrap it up.
Well, then I guess that's our cue. As in Let's Play all week long at the Mainline Theater, 9 o'clock, or is it 9:30?
9 o'clock, followed by Judah Friedlander.
Oh, well, my goodness, it's a 30 Rock orgy.
Yeah.
thanks so much for your time, guys. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.